You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston and this week with me I have Gareth. Hello.
Hello.
And we're starting something new here. We're embarking on a bit of a project. So Gareth started re-listening to the Monthly Range, Doctor Who Monthly Range from Big Finish, and started reviewing its release by release. And this kind of gave me the bug, and I went, well, I want to do a Monthly Range re-listen as well, because I've not paid it much attention for a while, really. I've kind of been listening to other things, not even Doctor Who type things, and I thought, well, yeah, you know, it's I just fancy some really, really solid four-parters, so I decided I was going to jump in and do the Monthly Range too. And we then both remembered that we podcast about Doctor Who and Big Finish, and there's perhaps a bit of an opportunity for us to begin a let's listen to all of the Monthly Range project. So 275 releases, and we're going to do the first few today. And with any luck, in a few years' time, we'll look back and go, oh, wow, that was a lot of Doctor Who. At least that's the plan. That's what we've got on paper. Before we get going, Gareth, just sort of tell us what was it that sort of made you kind of decide you wanted to not just listen to them, but sort of start reviewing them as well?
I think partly, this is quite a weird, boring answer really, but I'm trying to get more exercise these days, which means going on more walks, and I need something to listen to. And I thought, I've got my Big Finish app, and you kind of look at it, and the first thing it shows you is what you've got in release order. And it was the Monthly Range, mostly, that and a few Bernices. And I thought, oh, I should probably just work through them then. There's a few gaps where over the years I just had not listened to them until now. So I thought, well, you know, if I haven't yet, I should really get on with it. And we've already touched on a few of these before, and that was a lot of fun. And I quite enjoy, I mean, Doctor Who fans all love marathons, but I quite enjoy kind of tracking how things change and improve, because outside of audio stuff, I've been reading all the BBC books, Doctor Who novels, and before that I did all of the Virgin novels as well. So it's a lot of fun to kind of do that stuff in the order that it came out, so you can try and see kind of how did the authors, or in this case the sort of producers and actors and stuff, did they get better at certain things? Did they find things interesting and drop them later on? I just was curious about that, because obviously there's some Big Finish releases that I heard years and years ago from early in the range, and I just heard them completely out of context, and I like a bit of context. Sort of nice to reapply that and see how it turns out.
I think I'm more or less in the same boat there. It's to be honest, it's been really interesting to go back to these first few releases that we're going to be discussing today, because it's very clear they're finding the feet, I think, and the audio quality's not quite as up there as it is now, because technology's evolved and Big Finish have invested in studios and all this kind of thing. It really was just a few mates in someone's spare room to start with, wasn't it, more or less?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff like, I haven't mentioned this in any of the reviews, but in the first couple of releases they seem to have one gun sound effect,
yes,
which is this enormous Dirty Harry Magnum kind of sound So whenever somebody has to let off a gun, it's always this hand cannon noise, and it just kind of always made me think while I was listening to these, like, well, you know, they're just getting started. They've only got what they've got, but there's still a, you can see how quickly they improve. So by the time they're on the Holy Terror, for example, they're happily able to insinuate that a penguin is flapping about the place. You can hear his little flip-flap footfalls as he moves around. And you think they're already kind of really jumping ahead as fast as they can. Because you've got to remember, they're over the way doing Bernie Summerfield as well as this. So they're getting the experience in as fast as possible.
I think it is very clear that they do kind of grow into the Big Finish we know and love now quite quickly, actually. They get into that pattern with releases. They seem to get an increasing number of sort of Doctor Who actors on board. And I don't just mean doctors and companions. I mean like the guest actors and all that kind of thing. It gets moving very quickly. It reaches a certain level very quickly and kind of maintains it from there, I think. So, before we carry on, I will just qualify. I have heard absolutely all of these before. In fact, I think I've heard them all twice. So there's nothing really new to me here, with one minor exception that I'll come to in a moment. So this is, I think, my third time round on the monthly range, but this will be the first time I've done it in order. I think I've probably done something like 1 to 60, 1 to 70 in order before, and then it's kind of all got a bit more disjointed after that. But this will be the first time I've done the whole thing in the right order, in one go kind of thing. So, yeah, looking forward to exploring where we go. So we start off with, that's one minor thing I was saying. So for the purposes of now, I have not listened to The Sirens of Time. I've listened to it plenty of times before. I've even covered it on this podcast before, back in the early days. But I listened to the Redux, the new version, which I'd kind of had ever since it was released, but hadn't got to yet, which is very rare. Normally, I'm straight onto something on day one. So I've done the Redux of Sirens. But before I start talking about that, do you want to sort of let us know how you reviewed it, Gareth?
All right, yeah, this was the original version that I listened to. I've yet to get around to Redux. Okay, so The Sirens of Time then. Big Finish begins, the Doctor Who bit anyway, with three returning Doctors, each having a mini-adventure that culminates in the final episode. It doesn't quite work. I don't dislike the three stories that lead into a fourth structure. It's quite unusual, and I appreciate that however weak they might all feel in the moment, the Mark Gatiss one has some atmosphere at least, but they're all basically just peril, cliffhanger, see you in part four. They do serve an interesting purpose in the end, using the Doctor to divert history. Mind you, the end result there is it would have been better if he hadn't turned up at all, which makes for an unusual launch story for Doctor Who. The ideas aren't communicated very dynamically. It's all presented as questions and answers, or baddies info dumping at the heroes. Every character is either a font of knowledge or a half-wit, or both, including the Doctor, depending on the scene. On top of that, you have Maggie Stables as the bizarre Ruth Lee, a character and performance that can best be described as hard to forget. As we will soon see, there are better ways to utilise her talents. The multi-Doctor aspect feels somewhat token, but I enjoyed the bits where they all talked over each other. Peter and Colin are full of vim. With Colin, it's like he never left. Sylvester perhaps fares the worst, as he has the most Doctor talks to himself scenes, and he sounds a bit bewildered for most of it. To be fair, he is used to acting with Ace. Ruth Lee makes for a difficult scene partner by comparison. All in all, I don't hate it, and I can see things in it that could have worked, but there's a reason it's become a bit of a punching bag, and you can see why Big Finish would consider re-editing it later. Things could only improve from here on.
And I think I'm pretty much completely with you there. I think I'm in complete agreement. I enjoyed the Redux quite a lot more than I enjoyed the original. I've got to be honest, I do find the parts 1 to 3 a little bit dull. I quite like the fourth part, but I think that's just, you know, you've got the nice novelty of, well, here's three Doctors all together. And it's, even now, it's a nice novelty, you know, Big Finisher, far more open to the idea of Doctors meeting each other now. And, you know, we've had entire mini-series based on that concept and all this kind of thing. But it's still rare enough to feel like a novelty. And I think if Sirens nails one thing, it is the interaction of those three Doctors. But the first three parts, I was never a big fan of, particularly originally. I do think mixing and matching a little bit works. I like the way it's been re-edited. Part one seems to focus mainly on the fifth and seventh Doctors. The sixth Doctor kind of turns up, and the opening of his adventure actually becomes the cliffhanger for part one. And then we focus on the sixth Doctor a little bit more. And indeed, it's the sixth Doctor that kind of leads into the fourth part. So it's not an even balance. It's not just a case of editing fifth Doctor scene one, sixth Doctor scene one, seventh Doctor scene one, rinse and repeat with scenes two, three, four, and so on. It's, there's actually some thought gone into, okay, well, how can we restructure this story? And I do think it works. Like, it's never going to be my favourite story ever. And I think everyone at Big Finish would sort of say, well, there's a massive sort of sense of finding the feet and how are we going to do audio Doctor Who and that kind of thing here. But yeah, I like the Redux. I like what it does. It's the version that I will listen to from now on. I can't see myself having any reason to revisit the original unless it pops up on this podcast again for whatever reason and I need to do a bit of homework. But yeah, the Redux version, it works. The flaws are still there, but the flaws are in a different order and it kind of, it works like that, just sort of the little breaks in the action, you know, flipping between Doctors. It just, it gives you something, gives your brain a little more to work with while listening, I guess.
It's weird. It reminds me of, I don't know if you ever saw the fourth season of Arrested Development or if you're familiar with that series at all. It's very much an ensemble thing, but in the fourth season, they had to do, for various reasons, they couldn't get everybody together for each episode. So each episode did follow characters kind of like the Sirens of Time, and they re-edited it. So the version that exists now that you can see is kind of like Sirens Redux. So and it is generally the preferred version. So yeah, you've sold me. I will definitely investigate round two.
It's, I have to admit, when it was announced, I really wasn't sure. Mainly because I think that from the sort of first 10, 15, even 20 stories, there's others I think would be more interesting to go back to and do a special edition, quote unquote, of. But I guess Sirens is the one where it's in a particular format and actually you can undo that format and do something different with it where you don't really have that with any of the others. So yeah, I'd say it's worth going for the Redux and I think it's an improvement on the experience. The only other thing that I want to add really is, not just talking about the Redux here, but going into the Sirens as a whole. I know we'd had a few Bennies before this. It's not Big Finish's first release, but obviously it's the first Doctor Who release. It is an exceptionally competent piece of audio production. Like, it sounded very, very good to start with. Big Finish had found their feet. They were comfortable. Yes, there's been improvements. You know, it's very clear that everyone's got better at making audio drama since, because how you can make audio drama for 25 years and not get better at it would be entirely beyond me. But they started strong. Like, just from a purely production point of view, I think this is an absolutely excellent piece of work. And yeah, I really appreciate how much love and care and effort was going into bringing us new Doctor Who drama with the established actors from day one. It's great from that point of view.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Shall we move on to our second release?
Sure.
Okay, so release number two is actually a TARDIS team that we don't see a lot of from Big Finish. It's Phantasmagoria, which Fifth Doctor and Turlough. Don't get me wrong, there's a fair few. It's not like this has never happened again. But when you look at the grand scheme of Big Finish TARDIS team pairings, this is not one that you would see pop up often. I'm really glad they revisited it when they did the final release, the end of the beginning. They kind of acknowledged, well, yeah, we've got to get the Fifth Doctor and Turlough back together because that's how it all started. So before I say anything else about Phantasmagoria, I'll let you tell us what your thoughts were.
Okay. This is an immediate improvement for the monthly range. The script features strong ideas and they're served by the tone. Mark Gatiss loves a gothic historical and he's having a ball here with a jaunty tale about disappearing gamblers. The cast is impressive too. David Ryle, Gatiss and David Walliams all add a lot of colour. There are some growing pains. The script has much of that early Big Finish awkwardness where characters say what they can see. Gatiss seems uncertain about keeping things going for four parts. Turlough goes off on his own for ages for no significant reason, and not much is advanced in the middle episodes. You could probably condense it into an hour. Also, while Gatiss's jolly tone gives you something to grab onto, with memorable turns of phrase far outnumbering cliches, sometimes it threatens to get a bit too ripe, helped along by Gatiss and Walliams doing, it must be said, rather hammy audio turns. It's a good enough showcase for an actual Doctor and Companion audio story, with Davison hitting every beat, and Strixon, admittedly more light-hearted than ever, sounding suitably engaged. Despite a bit of padding, it's also enjoyably short. Something I would add that I didn't put into the review, because it didn't really occur to me until you mentioned it, is the pairing itself, which I think is a good example of kind of economy, because obviously Big Finish only have who they've got to work with. Now, I think Doctor Who fans who listen to Big Finish probably take it for granted I do this, right? I'm not criticizing, but to an extent, I think we take it for granted that you can just have everybody in it. So you can go, right, we want to do season 19. We'll get Tegan, Nyssa and Adric. I don't think Janet Fielding was remotely acting at the time, so she wouldn't have been available. They do get Sarah Sutton not long after this, but I guess she wasn't available at the time. So they go, yeah, we'll do Peter Davison and Mark Strixon. And that is, as you say, that's pretty odd. Like, straight out of the gate, you kind of go, that's not really a thing I've seen on the TV show. But I think it's a good example that they can go, well, look, we can get this person, so we can make this work. That's quite impressive in a way. We'll see quite a bit more of that as well as we go through.
Yeah, I'm all for Big Finish creating gaps that we never saw in the classic series, but there's no reason they're not there. Like, of course the Fifth Doctor and Turlough had other adventures between Resurrection of the Daleks and Planet of Fire. Let's open up that gap. Let's put some adventures in there. And you're right, it's more of a necessity thing than anything else. But I like it. I think it works. And I think the character of Turlough actually benefits from having these solo adventures sort of peppered throughout the early days of the monthly range. It's good to hear the two characters work. It's good to explore this whole new dynamic, and we're doing it on our second ever Big Finish release. The story itself is, I think I like it because of something you pointed out, actually. It's short. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's not trying to reach that precious 25 minutes per episode or else, or longer. I think episode lengths may be something we end up discussing a fair bit going through this, because they seem to fluctuate. There have been points where there can be whatever you want. There have been points where it's kind of a fairly solid 25-minute rule. Some are very short, some are very long. I think the average episode on this is somewhere in like 20, 21 minutes. So maybe we're losing 10, 15 minutes off the standard 100-minute classic serial. I did notice that some of the cliffhanger reprises went on for a little while on this. We're not quite in Planet of the Spiders Part 6 territory, but there's definitely a good couple of minutes tacked on. I think particularly in, was it Part 4, I think? We get a couple of scenes from the end of Part 3. Which, you know, fair enough, the cliffhanger reprise is an essential part of classic Doctor Who. It's something we associate with it, and particularly at this stage, they are very, very strongly trying to emulate classic Doctor Who, so fair enough. But yes, it doesn't outstay its welcome. It's entertaining. We do have some kind of big, slightly over-the-top performances in it, but have a look at season 21. We have some kind of big over-the-top performances in it. And that's fine. I can't say I have too much to add on top of what you said, but I do enjoy this one. It's a fun listen. And it's the only thing it sort of does wrong for me is gives us this Fifth Doctor and Turlough companion pairing and then kind of separates them for a fair chunk of the story. And I think at this point in Big Finish, I kind of want my regulars to be together because I think the novelty of the Fifth Doctor and Turlough together on audio is something that should have been celebrated a bit, but it kind of allowed Gatiss to tell two separate parts of the same story by splitting them up, which, you know, the companion is there to provide extra plot, subplot, whatever you need them to. They're a plot-based tool at the end of the day. So, yeah, really good effort. Very, very Mark Gatiss. Very Mark Gatiss. But we like very Mark Gatiss. It's a good thing.
Agreed.
I'd say we've definitely had one that's better than the other. Like, I think we're both agreed Phantasmagoria is a step up from Sirens. But, you know, we're early days. We're having fun. Let's move on to story number three then. And, the fact that they did this straight away is something I'm very happy about. It's Whispers of Terror, where the bad guy is audio. Very clever. Go on, Gareth, read us your review.
Okay. Justin Richards clearly understands the assignment. We're three stories into Big Finish Doctor Who, and we've already got a monster made of sound. Richards has a lot of fun with the concept and with misdirection, especially where one of the characters is reliant on sound. Fans of Getting the Era Right will find much to celebrate here, as this one thoroughly nails the more acerbic Six and Perry period of the series. The dialogue, the music, Baker and Bryant are all on point. Given how soon after this Big Finish would rehabilitate Colin's Doctor into a warmer and cuddlier version, it's great to have this one for posterity. It's often clever, with fun little allusions to Shakespeare and Richard's own work. The Good Soldiers pops up from Theatre of War to make the author's presence felt. It does, however, run into difficulty near the end. There's not quite enough mystery to fill the final episode. The question of Crane's death isn't nearly as ambiguous as it's presented, and hearing it over and over again just underlines this to a frustrating extent. Lisa Bowman makes for very interesting casting as the villain, Big Finish listeners already knowing her as the friendly Bernie Summerfield, but Parnell isn't that interesting as an antagonist. Her right-wing monstrosity is presented almost without comment, as if that'll do. I still think it's an underrated early stab at grabbing hold of the medium.
A lot happens for the first time here. Okay, we've got an audio-based monster, which I'm glad it does it. I'm glad we are experimenting early on. You know, I said before we're aiming for traditional to an extent here, and what Sirens did, even with its sort of, you know, not very Doctor Who-like format, was still very traditional. And Phantasmagoria, I genuinely think you could find it in the middle of season 21 and not bat an eyelid too much. This one, while definitely being the sort of thing you could find between season 22 and 23, it does play with the audio villain, and also it gets a little bit more political than I think we would ever have seen in classic Doctor Who. The idea of Lisa Bowman's villain being sort of quite far right and, you know, killing to, you know, we've had killing to be in politics in Doctor Who before, obviously, and we've had it again since. But I think this is very overtly sort of attacking the idea of the far right, which is, you know, talking in 2025 when things are getting a bit, should we say, politically spicy.
Unfortunately, that's one of the things. It hasn't aged at all in the complaints that it has, which are valid.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I found it very interesting to listen to, because you're right. It kind of just goes, this villain's a bit far right, and leaves it there. And we kind of go, oh, okay, then, bad. But there's far more. It's 2025. I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's not go into all of that. I really like this one. I find it to be a thoroughly interesting story. The idea of a sort of audio-based museum, and, you know, there's a creature in there. And you're right. It's quite clear kind of what went on. You know, was it a murder? Was it a suicide? All that kind of thing. It doesn't hold up as much of a mystery as it is presented as. We're talking about a series that has a story called Destiny of the Daleks, and at the end of the first episode, the reveal is the villains are the Daleks. It's Doctor Who's not known for its subtlety, and that's fine. So, yeah, I like Whispers of Terror. I definitely think it's the strongest release we've had yet out of the three we've discussed. And even though you're absolutely right, it is sort of prickly six, and prickly six is going to disappear very, very soon from everything. Colin Baker obviously decided to alter his performance, and, you know, one thing that any Doctor Who fan that has listened to early days Big Finish will tell you is that it completely sort of rejuvenates the Sixth Doctor. We're already entering a bit of a Sixth Doctor renaissance here. There's surprisingly, talking about character pairings, now obviously the Sixth Doctor and Perry is a very, very trad Doctor Who pairing. Like, it's name a Doctor and their main companion, you're going to say the Sixth Doctor and Perry in that category, aren't you? But at Big Finish, they're not paired together as much as you'd expect. They're not the rarity that the Fifth Doctor and Turlough are, but actually when you look through Big Finish, the Sixth Doctor's had a lot of new companions, which we're going to see very soon while discussing this. He's sort of spent quite a lot of time with Mel, particularly sort of edging towards more recently. There isn't all that much Sixth Doctor and Perry. They're kind of few and far between, which I find interesting.
Yeah, I think she might be a sort of casualty, really, of the fact that Colin, I can't speak, I don't know him, but it seems, you know, fair to infer that he wanted to progress the character, which will be more obvious when we get to Marion Conspiracy. But I mean, Perry is part of that era before that happened. I mean, unless you want to say, I want to set this around the time of the mysterious planet explicitly, when they are quite friendly, to be honest. And I think that's where anyone making the argument that the nice Sixth Doctor is kind of made up for Big Finish, I think, is being a bit unfair, because you look at the mysterious planet, you look at the way Colin's Doctor reacts to Perry's death in Mind Warp, it's there. But I think generally speaking, it's probably seen as, if you want the nicer Sixth Doctor, you need to move further ahead in time. So that might be why we don't get as much Perry. But it is odd, because as you say, I mean, this is the first time we get a really traditional Doctor Companion pairing. And almost immediately afterwards, they kind of go, we're not going to do that. But I don't know if that's really a bad thing. I mean, it's a bit rubbish if you're a huge fan of Nicola Bryant, but obviously she's going to have plenty of stuff to do as well. You know, they don't let that lapse. They go, well, we'll find stuff for you. So she's going to come into it soon, and then they're going to have a whole new avenue of stuff for Perry. So, yeah, it's interesting. You can see them kind of making and then having to respond to creative decisions, even with who is in a story. But I think there's reasons for it there, kind of baked into it.
I've never actually stopped to count, but I would guess there are probably more Fifth Doctor and Perry stories in the first 100 Big Finish releases than there are Sixth Doctor and Perry. So yeah, you're right. Perry's still there. Perry fans are still catered for, but they just do something different with the character. And again, I'm not against that. The should Perry have adventures in between Planet of Fire and Caves of Androzani debate rages on. And I suspect always will. And Big Finish do seem to have taken a pretty firm stance on it now. But that wasn't the case in the early days. They were happy to create another gap to explore. Well, we've had the 5th, 6th, 7th Doctor together. We've had the 5th Doctor. We've had the 6th Doctor. So the logical thing to do next is have the 5th Doctor again. we have to wait a little bit for the 7th Doctor and Ace, although it's coming and it's worth it when we get there. We have the 5th Doctor and Nyssa, another companion pairing that never actually happened on television, or certainly didn't happen on television any more than the 5th Doctor and Turlough did. They get an episode together at the start of Arc of Infinity, I suppose, don't they? But, the 5th Doctor and Nyssa. So obviously we're in the gap between Time Flight and Arc of Infinity here. Now, before I ever heard any Big Finish, back in the old days of the BBC Doctor Who website, when before new Doctor Who came along, and it was it BBC Cult or something like that? There was a series of BBC websites dedicated to cults, BBC shows. So we're going back a long way. And it had a series of essays on there. And one of them was The Doctor's Age. And it tried to sort of make The Doctor's Age make sense based on the sort of hints that we are sporadically given through the classic series. And for a certain, I can't remember exactly what it was now, but basically for a certain logic to hold, Nyssa had to have an extra long lifespan. Like Trachonites had to live for quite a long time. And there's actually decades where it's just the 5th Doctor and Nyssa between Time Flight and Arc of Infinity. So I think if you're actually going to make the Doctor's Age throughout the classic series make sense, this gap has to exist, and it has to be massive. So there you go. The 5th Doctor and Nyssa, perfectly legitimate pairing. Go on then. How did you review Land of the Dead?
Okay. Not great, honestly. For me, this one is a bit of a take-your-pick situation, complaints-wise. I don't think it works at all. The story isn't that complicated, but it's an awkward fit for audio. There's a massive house / scientific dig in Alaska, already a hard-to-picture mix, which lets loose creatures that are even more ancient than dinosaurs. These have peculiarities such as consisting entirely of bone, killing with a form of electricity, taking on physical aspects of their victims and also using those to evolve, hybridizing other animals to their cause, and also giving people visions. This feels a bit like throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. I lost track after a while. Crucially, however bizarre, These are just animals with no ill intent, so they have no dialogue. It's up to the doctor to info dump about what they are and what are the stakes. This becomes a bit tedious. It's hard to imagine the cast and director having a firm idea of what's going on, since the tone they convey in no way matches the danger and horror that should be coming across. Monica, an ersatz companion character, is so relentlessly irreverent that she punctures every scene she's in. It's like Steve Cole was expecting to write for Tegan. There are also some production wobbles. I know this isn't the sort of thing that bothers everyone, but there are some very obviously fake American accents in this which kept taking me out of it. Even worse, a few of them are meant to be Native American and clearly they're not, which veers into the realm of cultural insensitivity. It hasn't aged well. It helps if you remember that 2000 was quite some time ago, and no offence was intended by this quite young company, but it can still be hard to ignore what was obviously a questionable casting decision. As a story, it's all a bit vague, and as a production, it has some unfortunate choices. It's definitely not for me.
I hesitate to call this the Monthly Ranger's first dud, because I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's a terrible story. I do, however, think that it's a little bit too visual for audio. You know, we have rooms made of bones, we have dialogue-free monsters, and all, you know, a lot of things that you mentioned. And I just find this difficult to follow. It's kind of, it's asking me to sort of visualize an awful lot and not giving me a great deal to work with. And I think that might be its main issue. Interesting point you make about maybe we were expecting Tegan should be in this at some stage. We know with these early Big Finish releases that some were planned for characters and actors that we never actually got. I believe The Spectre of Lanyon Moor was originally supposed to be a Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane story.
That
makes a lot of sense. It's very, very sort of season 13-ish. I can see that, you know, apart from the sort of trip to Greece that we take in the third part. Then again, it's no different to Seeds of Doom, is it? I suppose. You know, doing two episodes in, is it the Arctic or the Antarctic? Seeds of Doom?
Yeah, the first two episodes of that.
Yeah, it's one of them. I wonder if you are onto something there. Maybe Tegan was meant to be in this at either an early planning stage or an early draft or whatever, which obviously never came to pass. It was a while before Janet Fielding came and did her one Big Finish ever, and then that was it. Before then coming back to do a hell of a lot of Big Finish. I've nothing really to add about this one. Within the first 10 releases, this is not the only Fifth Doctor and Nyssa story in an icy setting with a blue cover. And it's... I get these two mixed up. I get this and...
Winter for the Adept.
I nearly said this and Land of the Dead mixed up. So there you go. I get this and Winter for the Adept mixed up. We'll get to Winter for the Adept probably the next episode of this we do. But yeah, they're not a million miles apart, really. It seems interesting that we have two fairly similar stories so close together.
You get a bit of overlap, yeah, with a few stories here. I mean, including the next one, there's some echoes between, which I'm sure is all just sort of convergent evolution, where just people are coming up with the same kind of stuff. But it's interesting just to kind of watch those kind of coincidences echo around at the time.
Yes. Should we move on to the next one then? The next one being the Fearmonger. Okay. So go ahead, talk to us about the Fearmonger.
Before I do, I'll just mention that, as you said earlier, that it would have made sense for this to be in the slot for Land of the Dead. I think there were some production troubles with this one, mostly around getting the script to where they wanted it. It's in this the Big Finish Inside Story book. There's a lot of stuff about it. So I think it was planned to be that release, but alas, they had to wiggle it around. Okay, so listening to this one, I kept forgetting that John Blum hadn't written any new adventures. He co-wrote three excellent Eighth Doctor books with Kate Orman. Had he done so, at least in the early Ace days, I suspect they would have been hits. The Fearmonger nails Andrew Cartmell's bring down the government ethic, as well as the, at times, uneasy dynamic between the Seventh Doctor and Ace. On the former, it interrogates the idea of right-wing populism. All of its ideas here have, sadly, refused to age. At first, it seems like the wicked political party led by Jackie Pierce, brilliant, obviously, will be let off the hook, but it isn't that simple, which of course makes it all much more uncomfortable. On the latter, it uses its gently sci-fi gimmick to build to a confrontation between the Doctor and the Companion, which New Adventures fans in particular will be thrilled to note, doesn't hinge on Ace screaming at him. The Fearmonger takes what looks like an all-too-obvious fascism-once-removed plot and keeps it moving. Perhaps the only weak note is the supporting cast. They're all very good, but the story seems so populated by troubled northern blokes that I started getting them confused. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention. It's very solid stuff, with a couple of really excellent cliffhangers and a brilliant bit where Ace's confidence at taking someone down doesn't work the second time. It arguably goes over similar ground to Whispers of Terror, Unseen Force, Right-Wingers, Dangerous Political Speeches, but it does so with a stronger focus. It's another good example of Big Finish recapturing a time and a place, but also, in this case, pushing forward from there.
I'm a big fan of this one. It sounds like you are for similar reasons to me. Like, it does take a lot of the ideas and themes from Whispers of Terror and kind of does them a bit better. But I would sort of suggest that we've got a better Doctor Companion pairing here to tackle that kind of thing. Yes. Than we had in Whispers of Terror. Nothing wrong with the Sixth Doctor and Perry. I love them as a TARDIS team. But if you're going to go after sort of hard right wingers and you're going to have a pop at fascism, let's use the Seventh Doctor and Ace. Absolutely. Also, you know, it does sort of play with the whole Seventh Doctor manipulating Ace thing of the New Adventures and the Big Finish latched onto and have done so much with over the years. You know, it does it here. It kind of sets it out as a bit of a mission statement and just goes with it. And that's something, it's going to be a theme that we just go back to and go back to and go back to over and over again. But the idea of something else manipulating the Doctor and Ace, or both, or one or the other, you know, as the story goes through it. I think it's a great idea. It's, you know, all of a sudden Ace starts second guessing absolutely everything that she believes in. She kind of accepts the Doctor manipulates her a bit and is okay with it as long as it's the Doctor manipulating her and not a Doctor being manipulated by a Fearmonger manipulating her, which isn't obviously where the story ends up. But yeah, I find it interesting. I also love, and I've talked about this story on this podcast in the past, but I absolutely love that Ace has her Happiness Patrol snipers moment, you know, talking down the shooter kind of thing. And she gets it right, and it's great. Like, okay, brilliant, you know, Ace has learned from the Doctor. And then, as you rightly point out, she does it again and it doesn't work. It's just so well done. yeah, I really think that if Land of the Dead is perhaps, and I'm going to keep the perhaps there, Big Finish's first dud, I think The Fearmonger is its first roaring success. I absolutely love this story. I think it's really strong. I really, really like that straight away, it's almost like they knew what they wanted to do with the Seventh Doctor and Ace. And okay, the Seventh Doctor and Ace had had quite a lot of material by this point. You know, they'd had two seasons on TV and they'd had loads of comics and they'd had the new adventures. And Big Finish kind of don't particularly go, well, we're doing an immediate continuation of the TV series, or, well, we're just picking up where the new adventures left off. They're kind of going, we're cherry picking and we're making our own version of the Seventh Doctor and Ace. And you can kind of factor in whatever you want. It's not the Seventh Doctor and Ace that we saw on TV. These are not the two characters we left behind in Survival. But it's definitely not an Ace that's been through the new adventures. And it works. I'm really glad they put their own stamp on it straight away. And I think very early on, the Seventh Doctor and Ace stuff really feels like it has a bit of purpose. I'd argue there's more purpose to early Seventh Doctor and Ace stories than there are anything else. Like the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa are just having adventures and waiting for Tegan to turn up again in Ark of Infinity. The Fifth Doctor and Turlough don't see each other all that much. The Sixth Doctor and Perry, kind of same again. But yeah, this already feels like it's heading in a direction. It already feels like it's actively trying to develop particularly Ace as a character. And that will sort of go through various incarnations, some work better than others. I think as we move through this, we'll kind of go, well, that was a step forward, but that was two steps back while discussing Ace's development. But this is an incredibly good sort of foundation to build on with that, I guess.
Yeah, I think it holds up very well, because they do similar things like this again later, which of course they do. I mean, like you say, this is their kind of bread and butter, the Seventh Doctor and Ace, and it's what Andrew Cartmell was sort of playing with or directly doing in stories like Happiness Patrol, and certainly, you know, the conversations about race they were having in Ghostlight. So when you get to stuff like Live 34, I think you could quite rightly still have this in the conversation and go, well, you know, this is another attempt at the kind of fearmonger type thing. Yeah, it's kind of astonishing, really, for an early release. I mean, I'm always surprised by Whispers of Terror as well, because I just feel like that's a very kind of nailed the assignment kind of job, and so is this. I would agree this is stronger, but maybe that's just because there is actually more you can do with the Seventh Doctor and Ace, just as a proposition. They just feel a bit more rounded. They speak to something. So like they were intended to kind of fit into the late 80s sort of conversation, and yeah, you can continue to work with that in a way that perhaps you are limited with the Sixth Doctor and Perry, and then probably other pairings. But yeah, it's really great that they were able to get Sylvester and Sophie. It won't always be like this. Obviously, we'll find that almost immediately the next time we talk about these two. But yeah, when they can get this kind of political thing in their sights, it tends to be very good.
Yeah, I think the two sort of overtly political stories that we've had so far are probably the two best stories we've had so far, which is interesting. Another thing I'm going to sort of mention at this stage, and probably revisit as we keep going through these, is I guess on TV, both the Sixth Doctor and the Seventh Doctor kind of ended at a point where there was more to be said. You know, on TV, we never get the Sixth Doctor's regeneration adventure. He just kind of goes off with Mel at the end of Trial. And that's it. He's had a bit of a glimpse into his future. He knows Perry's not dead. It feels like well, we know why the Sixth Doctor regenerated. We know what happened behind the scenes and so on. But that era isn't finished at the end of Trial of a Time Lord. Same again with the Seventh Doctor. That era does not end with Survival. So we have these sort of open-ended chunks at the end of their lives where, or towards the end of their lives, where anything could happen. And Big Finish explores that. Big Finish relishes in exploring that. You know, in the case of both Doctors, it adds so much and has added so much over a quarter of a century. Fifth Doctor doesn't have that. The Fifth Doctor's era is very much bookended. It starts with Castrovalva and it ends with the Caves of Androzani. Yes, there's a couple of nice convenient gaps in there. We can easily pick out in between Time Flight and Ark of Infinity with Nyssa. We can easily pick out in between Resurrection of the Daleks and Planet of Fire with Turlough. And with not too much squinting, you can pick out a gap between Planet of Fire and Caves of Androzani for Perry. I guess what I'm saying is there's more ground to be explored with the Sixth and Seventh Doctors. There's perhaps more interesting territory to delve into with the Sixth and Seventh Doctors than there is the Fifth Doctor. And I do think that that automatically puts the Fifth Doctor at a little bit of a disadvantage when we approach Big Finish.
I don't disagree. I think that there is something to be said for them. I mean, obviously, there's something to be said for all of this. I don't know where I read this, but I'm fairly sure Peter Davison occasionally has said that the way he played the part or the kind of parts he was given in Doctor Who maybe weren't as rounded and colourful as they could have been. And I do get the impression with a lot of Big Finish, even early on, that they're kind of trying to give him some more kind of meaty stuff. And we see that throughout the run. I mean, we recently did an episode on the Stockbridge trilogy, as you say, and I think there's tremendous evidence there that someone, you know, knowingly or unknowingly, is saying we need to give Peter Davison interesting stuff to do. So like in one of those stories, him and Sarah Sutton are playing monstrous, cannibalistic, evil versions of the Doctor and Nyssa, and that's the kind of stuff I kind of suspect he relishes. And stories, you know, we're going to get around this era. Land of the Dead obviously is not a particularly strong example because he's kind of doing the mad, well, not mad, but a scientist character trying to make sense of the alien threat. Very typical stuff. But he's going to have other stories coming up fairly soon where he's got, you know, colourful things to do, like particularly once we hit into the sort of Perry and Eremim stuff. There's a whole dynamic there that he didn't really have a chance to explore on television, where he's kind of taking care of characters who can take care of themselves, whereas on telly a lot of it was kind of companions biting at him all the time and him kind of putting up with it. So yeah, narratively I do agree that there's a limit to what you can do with him compared to what's on the table for the other two. But I think creatively that's probably you know, leaves a gap that Peter Davison can fill, which I think he does quite well. I mean, I've always found that his sort of older performances suit Doctor Who better. I'm not a huge fan of the Fifth Doctor, to be honest, on TV. He's fine, but I don't know. I don't find the performance that exciting. I watched something like Campion. So I don't know if you've ever seen that. And that's, to me, that's a wonderful alternate Doctor Who performance that he gives in that. He's so otherworldly and interesting in that. But yeah, no, I love the way he kind of attacks Big Finish. Whereas with Colin and Sylvester, yeah, there's a lot more of a kind of narrative impetus. And with Colin, maybe there's a bit of both, because he likes to develop his character as well as fill the narrative mysteries.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to sort of see how, well, to re-see, I guess, like I say, none of this is new to me, how we explore these Doctors and these dynamics and kind of what's open to us to play with to start with. You know, Big Finish have created a gap for the Fifth Doctor where he's companionless and can have adventures on his own and that kind of thing. And that, again, is a dynamic we never went anywhere near on television. No. I have to admit, I'm also with you that the Fifth Doctor is not my favourite. I've said this before on this podcast, nothing against Peter Davison, nothing against the character, just my preferences for Doctors lie elsewhere. It's near enough as simple as that. But I'm looking forward to, as you say, getting to the Perry and Erimem stuff, and all of a sudden we're playing with historicals quite a bit, and that works surprisingly well. And yeah, well, I'm glad we've started this. I'm looking forward to sort of pushing on and sort of making our way through this range and seeing what we find in there. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and thank you for sort of starting to review it, because it's been an excellent starting point for us.
You're welcome. It helps me remember. It's why I've been doing those book things, because genuinely, if I just listen to an audio drama or if I just read a book, it will mostly be gone from my brain within a week or two. Whereas if I at least write down some sort of vaguely coherent thoughts, then it will lodge in there a bit better. And one day someone can say to me, well, what did you think of this release? And I might have a chance of actually answering them.
You'll have a definitive answer. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll leave this one there then. So thanks very much for joining me, Gareth.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back for more Spodcasting soon. Goodbye now.